well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those deads up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there. I think I can get it to go down.
I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello, welcome to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
It's going well.
Excellent, excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Yep, doing well. We do have a couple other co-hosts, but...
They bailed.
Yes, they bailed.
Yeah, we got very sad news that our co-host, Abraham Spiney, sadly just had a birthday today, so he's now old. And we need a new demographic for someone to appeal to the young people now. He was out getting fit for his walker today, bifocals, the whole nine yards.
And if he stops recording on the show altogether, don't ask questions. Don't call the police. It was just, you know, he decided to move on.
He's got to get his ear hair trimmed. It's just really not pretty.
This is Dark Discussions, where we discuss weekly, usually a genre film. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, arthouse, midnight movies, cult films, and whatnot. And we try to discuss intelligently a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have some house cleaning stuff that we'll bring up at the end of the episode. But before we do that, once again, darkdiscussions.com and darkdiscussions@AOL.com. We will read your emails on the podcast. News. Anyone have news of note?
I actually do have something I just ran across right before I hopped on Skype here.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
Comcast is launching a $5 a month streaming box. This is a little weird, but
is
apparently
that legal?
This is going to be it resembles a weird version of the like a Roku or an Apple TV, but it's from Comcast. But it allows you to access apps that has all the streaming stuff on it, like Netflix, Amazon Prime, YouTube, HBO, yada yada. But you can rent it from Comcast for $5 a month.
Comcast is evil and they suck.
I don't disagree.
Yes,
because they're really my only choice for cable service.
Same.
But isn't that something that's pretty much true of all the cable providers?
I don't know.
I've never had experience with any other.
Comcast is horrible. It's the evil.
Yeah, but and, I mean, Time Warner was the one where they had a.
They're evil too.
But. Yeah, that's pretty bad. Where they had a joke on Saturday Night Live that the devil had been a former Time Warner Cable customer service representative. They suck. They suck too. I've never heard someone say, "I love my cable provider." Never.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because they can get away with crappy customer service because usually there's only one choice. Also in this article here, it says that there was a 2018 MPAA report that has some statistics, including the fact that streaming video services added 131.2 million new subscribers worldwide, bringing the total subscription base to 613.3 million users, which is up 27% compared to 2017.
And what company was that?
The MPAA did the study.
Oh no, but streaming of a specific service or any service?
No, all streaming services.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of people are actually cutting cable because they suck. And unfortunately, we're stuck with their internet, though.
You usually use the same company for internet, which is why Comcast is launching this thing, because people are canceling their TV subscriptions but still want to watch streaming stuff, so they're trying to get a chunk of the pie.
Right. have AT&T for our phone, and they are trying really, really hard to get
Uverse.
Us to drop. Yeah, they're trying very hard to get us to drop DirecTV so we can switch to Time Warner Spectrum, because it doesn't suck as much as it used to suck. You know, that's...
Yeah, see, we're dropping Comcast within the next 2 weeks, and we're going to switch to the Hulu Plus is what we're going to do. Cool. Yeah, but unfortunately, we're stuck with Comcast internet, because otherwise we got to drop down to 20.
The day they come out with a Red Zone app, I'm dropping my TV service. That's the only reason I have TV service.
There you go. Yeah. So that's interesting. Also, another interesting note that's technology related, such as what you just mentioned, Eric, is that Samsung, the great South Korean company, is not producing any more DVD, Blu-ray, or 4K players.
That's a few weeks old at this point.
Yeah, at least in the United States, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, so you got to stick with your LGs, I guess. But
or Sony's or Philips.
I actually
have a Philips 4K player, and it works wonderfully.
Nice.
And I've heard positive things from the Sony player about from Dave Z of the horror. Sorry, the Exploding Heads Horror Movie Podcast.
Gotcha. I have a LG Blu-ray, and it works quite fine myself. I don't have the 4K yet, though.
Yeah, I'm personally, you know, obviously a fan of physical media. You know, I was just watching Game of Thrones on just Blu-ray, not on 4K. And the image does just look better on physical media. It does.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Yeah.
It's uncompressed.
There you go.
But there is such a convenience now to just being able to call up whatever it is, you know, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, Shudder, and just watch it. And, you know, most of the time people aren't watching, right? They're kind of watching. They're distracted watching.
Yeah, there. Unfortunately, I have to admit, I've become a two-screener myself.
Yeah, surfing the net type of thing.
And I try my hardest not to do that if it's something for the podcast. Yeah, but it's just like, you know, well, what if it's something like, I don't know, John Carpenter's The Thing that I've watched 100 times before?
Right.
You know, so I'm not condemning the people who do that yet. but people... Look, I mean, there was such a huge upgrade from VHS to DVD, and DVD offered all that stuff they don't offer anymore.
Unless you buy a boutique label.
Yeah, unless you're going boutique label, which most people don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. You know, your average Walmart shopper.
Your average Joe doesn't know who Arrow or Scream Factory is.
Yeah, so they don't, and, you know, they just saw Blu-ray was more expensive. They never upgraded to a Blu-ray player, even though you can get them from McDonald's in a Happy Meal now, because they're so cheap. But there really wasn't that significant a benefit to them upgrading, let alone, you know, they just started catching on, and 4K! Out that comes. And sure, if you're some sort of, you know, elitist video snob, like, oh, I don't know, Eric Webster, you might have already upgraded to 4K. But for most people...
No, I'm going to stop you right there. If I was an elitist video snob, I would have upgraded to 4K 3 years ago.
It's only been 2 years.
I'm telling you, they were around for a very hefty price 3 years ago.
Oh, I would have totally... If my TV were to magically explode... All right, didn't take the cue. If my TV were to magically explode right now, you know, we would go 4K, you know. But I can't justify ditching the TV and getting a player or upgrading my Xbox One to do that right now. I have been buying 4K for like 2 years now, the discs, under the assumption that so I could, because they come with the Blu-rays, right? So
most of them.
Yeah, so future proof. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, more often than not, unless I'm looking for the commentary track or the extras, I'll still just end up streaming it. So it's sad, but you know, it's what the market is.
Yeah. Samsung would not be doing this if they were going to lose a boatload of money. Fact is, not a whole lot of people are buying disc players anymore.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yes, I know. Same with CD players, right? I mean, that's why, like, Best Buy doesn't have CDs anymore in their thing. Mm-hmm. And right. Walmart, actually, I went in to get the Nicki Minaj latest album, and they actually said they have no idea what's coming in and when it's coming because a third party actually stocks Walmart's CDs, which I thought it was interesting. I go, oh, look at that. They don't even stock it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just bought it on iTunes.
Yeah.
Nicki Minaj. She rules. So it's unfortunate.
Did you listen to Nicki Minaj? Yes, it is unfortunate.
Oh, for God's sake.
I am neither agreeing nor disagreeing with either sets of comments here this evening.
Thank you.
I am completely agnostic on the Nicki Minaj a toi thing.
She rules. On a side note, I did post an article on the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group, which people should join, where we have a lot of folks talking about many things, including tonight's movie that we're going to talk about. But one of the articles I posted was an article about how what you were kind of saying, Eric, about the discs are so much better mm-hmm. because they're not compressed.
Right.
And so that's always the best. But as Mike mentioned, people don't care. People just want to press a button and get the movie.
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, and only that last thing I was going to say is also, as some people know, you can purchase things from iTunes or Amazon Prime or whatever, but they can delete it from your account.
Right. Yep.
And that's bad, even though you purchased it. So a lot of times they say that you should just download and get a copy, but that obviously defeats the purpose too. So
Right. And this is a conversation I've been having with Dan on the Ascansity podcast forever, because Dan is the kind of person who loves to, he's got his setup at home with really nice speakers and a turntable, and he likes to take his pristine vinyl, which he takes the effort to wash every now and then. And put it on and just sit motionless in the exact center between the two speakers and listen to an album in its entirety. And that's how he thinks music should be listened to. And he thinks anything less is not worth listening to. And I've been trying to explain to him for years now that most people who aren't audiophiles like Dan is don't care about all that. As long as they can hear the words, they're cool. And it's kind of the same concept here with movies, which is as long as they can see what's on the screen, they're okay.
Right. I
was just going to say that Dan may be wrong in that case, because obviously when you have a CD that has 50K or whatever, non-compressed and all this other stuff, it actually can sound better than a record. But I can understand the nostalgia.
Enthusiasts would disagree with you.
I can understand the nostalgia, but Mike,
and I read somebody who said and made the argument, and it's, I don't know if it's true or not. I'm not one of those people, so I don't care. That it depends on what it was originally mastered for in the first place. You know, you pull out something.
Yeah, that also makes a difference. Yes.
Right. If you pull out something that was made in the 1960s or 70s for vinyl, it will sound better on vinyl, reportedly. Than something that was recorded in like 1989 or 1993 for CD first, and that will probably sound better as digital. You know, so
Jimi Hendrix and the Doors sound pretty good on CD.
I would argue
that you don't have the ear to care about the difference,
right?
Because like Dan can actually, like, if you put on, like, you know how there's a, what do they call them? It's not Super CD, but it's something like that. Anyway, there's like a higher end CD, and then there's your regular CD. he can tell the difference between those if you put them on. Yeah. I can't, honestly. It really depends on how sensitive your ears are. It also depends, like, when you're watching movies, how sensitive your eyes are. Some people really, like I said, they don't care. As long as they can tell what's on the screen, they don't care. Me, personally, when I put on a 4K version of a movie, I'm just like, oh, yeah. Because I care about the difference.
Right. Like, I'll look at in my classroom, right? Yeah, I'm a public school teacher. We're getting ready to upgrade from Windows 95 any day now. They bought
actually still using Windows.
No, 95. They're I don't know what they're at, but they're behind. They're always behind in terms of technology. So I use my own laptop. I go wireless as often as I can. I have lapped the school's technology several times, but I'm still required to have a school computer in my room. And that school computer is wired to the projector in the room, even though I use the projector wirelessly with my laptop. But I do have a person who comes in to use my computer. And it's the problem is they bought, even though the computers are not up to date, they did buy like the widescreen monitors for all the out-of-date PCs. And the problem is the projectors are out of date. So the resolution on the projectors is much worse than the resolution on the monitor.
It's always a technology game.
Right. But the problem is, on the rare occasion I have to step into the school, step onto the school computer to put in my grades or something, it hurts my eyes because the resolution, it's like one of those things which set
it's
to a lower 40
by 480, yeah.
Right. And it's stretched across the screen, but the other teachers don't notice it. I'm like, how can you watch this?
Uh-huh.
How can you? I don't see any difference. It's like,
So I guess to summarize, everything we're talking about here is that there's a small subset of people that have more discerning taste and would like the higher quality, but they will lose usually in the tech battles because the majority of the people who spend money would rather buy a less expensive, lower quality solution.
Yes.
Right. And they have a attention span of an ant.
And I'll also go so far as to say when you said they like sit down and listen to an album.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, they're like, I'm a big fan of The Doors. Well, have you listened to the L.A. Woman album or you know, the Morrison? I have the greatest hits. You know, that's
right.
What they're a big fan of. And I am not disparaging them as a fan. So even those people, you can be whatever kind of fan you want to be, but the normal fan of a normal person of a pop celebrity doesn't know the album.
Right.
You know, they know the hits. If they know the whole album, it's because it's one of those things like Hotel California where everything on the album was a hit.
Right.
Well,
right.
And it also depends on
who's next
at this point. Like people our age grew up with albums, so we might own an album of something and we might purchase an album of something. People who grew up and like iTunes was already there when they were growing up, probably think of music in a very different way.
Right. I mean, I still buy a lot of albums. Like I bought Taylor Swift's albums and I bought Nicki Minaj's albums and stuff, which are more new versus say all my older stuff, which I would buy albums anyway. But yeah, if it's just a few songs I want, then yeah. But a lot of people will just.
I do both.
Yeah. Same thing. Yeah. So it is interesting how it is. Let's see. Luke Perry passes away. One of the.
Oh my goodness! Have we not talked about that?
No, we haven't.
I haven't.
All right.
Riverdale. He's been.
I'm getting confused because I've talked about like the Blu-ray thing. I talked about on Ascansity and Luke Perry too. So I'm just like, well, sorry.
Yeah.
I've already talked about this stuff. So I'm like, what? Didn't.
Yeah, so 90210. I never watched that show. I watched Melrose Place, but I didn't watch 90210. So I didn't know anything about Luke Perry except that he was a the girls liked him, and I did see him in Riverdale and stuff as a sporting actor. But yeah, he passed away way too young. What was he? 53 or something? 51, something like that.
52. Yeah. And he had a massive stroke.
Yeah. That's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for the younger folk who are like 25 or 30 that listen to this podcast, 20 years ago, Luke or 30 years ago, actually, Luke Perry was huge. Yeah, he was like the big.
He was the new James Dean.
Yeah.
And of course, if people don't know who Luke Perry is, they certainly don't know who James Dean is.
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, we're old.
Yeah.
You know you're old when the guy that played a heartthrob when I was in my college years was cast as Archie's dad in the Riverdale series.
Right.
And now he's dead. You know, admittedly he died at a young age. You know, he didn't die, you know, at 75 or something. But yeah, that's right. Just. Look down the road. The Reaper's coming.
Yeah. What the hell did I just watch recently? There's a woman that was really, you know, really hot. And she played the mother of a daughter who's really hot. And I was like, I can't believe this woman is almost my age. And she's playing a mom because it's like, I remember when she wasn't. And I wish I remember who it was. I can't remember. That's too bad.
Aging is a bitch.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Yeah, what the hell movie was it? God damn it, I can't remember.
time fucks us all.
Yeah.
Sure. Isn't that from Game of Thrones?
It was something very
Somebody
close
said
to that
in Game of Thrones.
From,
was it Davos?
Sir Davos Seaworth.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Let's see. Scott H. Byram. I went to the concert. I mentioned that.
And nobody cares.
Right. Well. He part of the soundtrack for Hell and High Water, Son of Anarchy, the Mayans, Far Cry 5.
Still no caring.
Yeah. So the show was real good. Everybody should listen to his music. It was an interesting concert though, because the opening act was thrash metal. The second act was country music. The third act was Scott H. Byram, which was alternate country. And then the fourth act was thrash metal again.
That is weird.
Yeah. Well, what it is that Scott H. Byram, when he was younger, he's 44 or 45 now, he used to do punk too. So his music is country, blues, gospel, and hard rock and punk. So, you know, each song on his album is a little different. It's kind of interesting. And so he travels in a lot of circles. So he's friends with thrash metal bands and country bands, and they're all from Texas. So he brought them, they all went on tour together so it's kind of interesting how it was very eclectic. We had people wearing ties all the way to people with tattoos on their faces.
I think it's funny because I'm not a metal guy. I don't know the metal scene, but it seems like every time I turn around, there's, you know, black metal, death metal, speed metal, metal, vomit metal, whatever metal.
Yeah, there's been a whole bunch of new subgenres.
The one thing I've never heard of in my life was country metal.
Yeah, and it was country metal. Actually, Eric would probably actually like the band that ended Goddamn Gallows. It's called.
I've heard something approaching country metal before. It's not he doesn't refer to it that, but there's a guitarist named John Five. He actually toured with both Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie. But he also has solo albums, and he actually learned how to play guitar watching Hee Haw, I think. So okay. Like he's got a heavy country influence in his guitar playing technique.
Yep.
But he plays metal, so it's actually kind of awesome.
It is. It does sound awesome. Yeah.
How did we turn this into a music podcast tonight?
Because Scott H. Byram was part of the soundtrack of a lot of genre stuff.
And so,
which is how I actually found out about him, to be honest. But that is cool, actually, Eric. So you actually probably would have liked the concert that I went to.
No, probably not. Yeah. I have very little tolerance for crowds anymore.
Well, that's a fair point, yeah.
So I think that all this, I think I know part of the reason this turned into a music podcast.
It's because we don't want to actually talk about the movie.
Well, you know. Any other news before we do actually talk about the movie?
Do we want to do what we've been watching?
Sure, yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, I, doing my due diligence to make sure I'm prepared for Avengers Endgame, caught up on my Marvel shit. I went and saw Captain Marvel, which was sufficiently entertaining. Didn't blow my mind. It's a good girl power movie. There's some cool stuff there.
You go, girl.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I also, I had never had any interest in the Ant-Man movies, but I heard somebody say that with the end credit scene at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp is probably going to be an important tie-in to the Endgame. So I decided to watch those, and I did. And they're actually better than I thought they were going to be. They're quite amusing. They have a great deal of humor in them. So that... Excuse me. If that sounds like your speed, then go right ahead and watch those. I also watched a movie called Captive State. It was a bit of a disappointment because I was looking forward to this one. Because it's about how people are living after aliens have taken control. And there's like a group of people who are rebelling and a group of people who are conspiring with the alien leadership.
Sounds like that television show.
Colony?
Colony, that one.
Oh, I haven't seen that, so I can't say.
It's good, except that they ended it after three seasons, so you'll never know how it ends.
That's a bummer. Exactly. I hate it when that happens.
Yep.
But like this movie, Captive State, it actually, as far as the resistance stuff goes, it was pretty good. The acting was good and everything like that, but like as an alien invasion movie, it kind of sucked. Because they give you a brief glimpse of one at the beginning of the movie, but they don't really understand how it is they're able to maintain control and do some of the things they do to maintain control. And then like later in the movie, there's a different kind of alien they bring in to hunt down people, and you're like, why? The other one seemed pretty capable. And there's just a whole bunch of unexplained stuff about the aliens, which I found unnecessarily confusing.
Wait for the sequel.
There won't be a sequel.
But the sequel will explain everything.
But there won't be a sequel.
There's a 5,000-page Bible they wrote for the entire quadrilogy.
Yeah, there's not going to be a sequel. John Goodman's in the movie. So, I mean, check it out if you're a fan. He's good. The other guys in the movie are good. I just didn't find that as a whole it came together very well.
Vera Farmiga's in it too, right?
Yeah, but not very much.
Gotcha.
They bill her, but she's only in like two or three scenes.
Okay, so fake advertising.
Yeah. And then I also watched a movie called Greta, which this movie was, I rated it 3.5 stars out of 5 on Letterboxd because the last 30 minutes of the movie really turned it around for me. But up until that point, I was pretty bored. It's an extremely slow-faced first hour of the movie. And it stars Chloe Grace Moretz.
Who may be in a movie we're going to talk about tonight?
Maybe. And Isabelle Huppert.
Yes, yeah,
are
French
the two
actor.
Main characters in this movie. And there was also somebody who played Chloe Grace Moretz's roommate in this movie. And I was like, I know her. Where do I know her from? Well, it was Micah Monroe. And she's been any number
from
of
It Follows.
Talked about. It Follows, The Guest, Tao on Netflix.
The Guest, that's right, yeah.
All those. So she's in
the movie. Tao,
But like so the movie was very slow in getting going, but once it did, I found it to be really enjoyable towards the end. So if you can hang in there for a while, I'd recommend Greta.
Episode worthy, you think?
Probably not so much. I would want somebody else to watch it first and get excited about it.
I want to remind you, we when you ask episode worthy, we did do an episode on The Gallows.
Well,
that was, we went in blind though.
Yeah. But there have been mistakes made, Mike. We all know that.
Curse you, Ape Spidey!
I was listening to the Midnight Drive-In podcast, and they did an episode where they covered Tucker and Dale versus Evil and Cabin in the Woods. And got me all excited about how awesome those movies are again. So I rewatched The Cabin in the Woods, which was a lot of fun. It's fun to see a pre superstar Chris Hemsworth in a movie. It's also just an awesome fucking movie. And I'll be revisiting Tucker and Dale versus Evil this weekend. So yeah, that's what I've been watching.
Excellent. Excellent. Some good stuff there. And not so good stuff there. but yes, yes. Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale versus Evil are available everywhere. Greta is about to disappear from theaters, as is Captive State.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Very well. Let's see. Me and Mike have been watching American Gods, two episodes so far. First episode was good. Second, not so good. That was a struggle for us to get through the second episode. Would you agree, Mike?
Yeah. And to be fair, I don't think it was a bad episode, but for a podcast, it was like, what happened Nothing to happens. Talk about? Yeah. Not much. It was a sort of filler, move the pieces on the board around the episode. And, you know, it wasn't bad. We've seen bad TV.
Right,
this wasn't bad. This wasn't like the Under the Dome or what was the one about the killer animals that was on CBS a few years ago?
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I didn't see
like
that.
Like a Dean Koontz story or something. It was pretty bad.
Right.
You know, this was just there. You know, it's very forgettable. Yeah, we'll see, because there was a lot of turmoil behind the scenes. Hopefully the show picks up, you know, as it proceeds through the second season. Although there's only like 8 episodes, so they don't have a lot of time to pick it up.
Right, right. So hopefully they speed it up pretty quick. Because, yeah, you're right. It's like they used a whole episode just to move people around. It's kind of odd, especially like you said, there's only 8 episodes. So how much story did they have to tell? So let's see. Anything else that you've seen, Mike, that you wanted to mention by any chance?
It is my busy time of year, so I haven't really watched much. I did just watch finally, because the 30-day rental was going to expire in 4 hours. The man who killed Adolf Hitler and then the Bigfoot.
Yeah, Eric saw that. He said he didn't like it.
What? Did you say you didn't like it, Eric? The movie, The Man Who Killed Adolf Hitler and Then the Bigfoot?
Oh, I'm going to have to rewatch that at some point. It was so counter to what I was expecting that I don't think I was able to process it.
Well, the weird thing is, because of your counter processing, it countered the counter, and so it ended up being more offbeat than I was expecting.
Really?
So, because a couple of people had said that it's really, you know, not off the wall. But when you do get to the Bigfoot scene, now admittedly the Bigfoot scene is like an hour and 15 minutes into the film.
Yes.
It is kind of, you know, wacky, but it wasn't exactly what I was, you know, but it's not what, if you expect that for the entire film, you'll be disappointed. I thought it was a nice little film with Sam Elliott, Larry Miller.
Worth an episode, Mike.
I don't know if it's worth an episode, but it's not bad for a watch, and certainly if you can get it free on Netflix at some point.
Top 20 for the year, possibly. Or you would hope not by the end of the year after seeing the one.
First of all, it would not be, and I think Eric will agree with me that it is not a horror film.
That is correct.
It would fit under the other genre.
Okay.
I would say it would have like an outside shot of the top 10. You know,
almost just a straightforward drama.
Yeah. Well, except that you have a guy who murders Hitler and then the Bigfoot.
Right.
Yeah, but not like that. Not like the title makes you think. I don't like that title. It's very misleading.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's trying to make it sound like it's trying to make it sound like it's going to be either a comedy, horror comedy, or
it makes it sound like
a midnight movie from, you know, 1975. And it's neither.
Right, it's not. But it is still the most awesome title a movie's ever had.
It is a cool title.
It's a good title, but not for that movie.
Right. But other than that, you know, watching stuff for the podcast. Actually, I've been watching stuff for the podcast because I rewatched the first season of American Gods, and you can listen to that podcast if you're interested in that. And I have rewatched the final season of the penultimate season of Game of Thrones, mostly with the commentary tracks. And you know, I always recommend picking up the box sets, which we talked about before, because you get all the extras, including all the commentary tracks. However, I do request that maybe in the future HBO will want to let the people doing the commentaries actually watch the episode before they do the commentaries.
Oh, I kind of liked hearing live reaction.
Well, I did like some of that because Lena Headey is on the final episode, and she says she doesn't read the script. She doesn't want to know what happens. So she's completely shocked by how the season ended.
Yeah, that was
and
fun.
You heard it genuinely, and that is fun. But there's also another episode where it's the actors who plays Ser Jorah Mormont and Sir Davos Seaworth, and they're like quiet the whole time. He's like, sorry, we haven't seen this. We're just we're just paying attention to the story.
Right.
It does kind of liven up a little bit as it goes along. They are fun to listen to, you know, but it isn't necessarily the most informative thing. It's not like a commentary track is something that I think they had to do heavy remastering on.
Right.
You know, it's sound placement.
There was I gotta say, there was one moment, which is actually one of my favorite commentary moments ever, which was when Gwendolyn Christie and what's his name? The guy that plays Sam.
Oh, Bradley.
Thank you. When they were on a commentary track, and there's on the episode where there's that montage of Sam cleaning out bedpans and serving stew, and Gwendolyn Christie just lost her shit, could not stop laughing. And Sam was like trying to talk about it, but she just kept on howling and howling. And eventually he was like, you know what? I'm just going to wait till you're done.
Well, now, what's fun about that is that Lena Headey has a very, shall we say, earthy sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Sense of humor seems to be more in the... body kind of fart rumors.
Okay.
You look at how classy and refined Cersei comes across. Lena Headey is like the exact opposite.
Gotcha.
Where Gwendolyn Christie.
Has a
really dry wit. You know, through as she's talking through it, and she's does a great straight man, you know, like throwing out jokes with a straight face, and so to hear her lose it. You know, it was.
Now,
charming.
Does Sophie have one too? My Sophie?
Oh, no, nope. Nobody likes Sophie. She's banished. Lena Headey actually talks about how slimy she is. That was.
But does Sophie do anything on that? Like,
nope.
It's her pictures. They don't blot her out yet.
Does she do any commentaries?
No.
Are you serious?
Yes.
She doesn't do one. Arya doesn't do one. Danny doesn't know one.
Most of the commentaries for season 7 are behind the scenes folks.
Scenes guys, yeah. They didn't get any of the... The
a
only
lot of camera
stars,
operators, directors, cinematographers, special effects people.
And the for lack of a better term, the B-list actors, right? So the only ones that are the kind of above the title they got was Jon Snow and Cersei Lannister for the final episode.
Interesting. How about that? Didn't Dinklage do one too?
Nope, not this time.
Oh, but Eric, you mentioned that you heard him in his American accent and you thought it was funny.
Oh, that was one of the special features. That was an interview they're doing.
Gotcha. There. I have the Walmart version of season 7, and it came with an extra disc called "Exclusive Bonus Disc: Building the Unimaginable Inside the VFX Department."
So, that was just one of the extra features on my. Season. That's weird.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, this is I bought the day it came out, so since then it may have been added to, you know, later versions or something. So that's interesting.
I think that's exactly what I was watching when I made that comment.
Ah, there you go. And where did you buy yours? Do you remember?
Amazon.
Gotcha. You know what's weird is I've ordered stuff from Amazon sometimes through and it's actually shipped and by Amazon, not a third party, and it has a Walmart sticker on it.
That's gonna
work. Yeah. So they must use the same distributors or something. All right. Any other news anybody want to bring up? Anything?
Nope.
All right. So I guess we'll discuss our topic tonight. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
All right. Tonight, we're going to be discussing the 2018 remake of Suspiria.
At the beginning, she gave me things. Perfect balance. Perfect sleep. But she wants to get inside of me. I can feel her.
When you dance the dance of another, you make yourself in the image of its creator.
I feel like I'm not even here yet.
The temple is incredible.
One, two, three.
It's the way she transmits her work.
You have to decide, what is it you want to be for this company?
There's more in that building than what you can see, Doctor.
Dangerous people. Three mothers. Three gods. Three devil. Mother Tenebrarum, Mother Lacrimarum, and Mother Suspiriorum. Darkness, tears, and sighs.
You're making some kind of deal with them.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. It's all a mess. The one out there.
That's right. The remake of Suspiria. It's directed by Luca Guadagnino. He's actually a pretty good director. Has been noted for a number of art house type films and whatnot. He actually had a Academy Award nominated film, Call Me by Your Name.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, I have another one of his films called A Bigger Splash that stars Tilda Swinton, but I haven't watched it yet. Suspiria obviously is a remake of the 1977 classic by Dario Argento. This film actually has a pretty good cast of character actors, but also up-and-coming superstars, including Dakota Johnson, who is possibly one of the breakout stars of 2019 by the end of the year, depending on how those films do that she's in coming up. Tilda Swinton's in it. Mia Goth, who folks may know from The Cure for Wellness, and also is the wife of that crazy kid from that was in Transformers. What's his name? He's nuts.
LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Yeah, so she's in it. And then a lot of European folk are as well. The film is...
You forgot probably... Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Chloe she's a name.
Moretz. Yep, she's a name as well. The film is probably in name only. Remake. It does have the same premise as in Coven of Witches, but besides that, it's and that it takes place in Germany. But besides that, it's completely different because
not entirely. It still has Suspiria and references the Mother of Tears and references the three mothers. It's about a woman going to a dance school that's run by a coven of witches. Once upon a time, they had a TV guide, and they would have these one sentence blurb descriptions of the film, and it does fit that. It does color within those lines.
Fair enough. I'll give you that, Mike. But generally, it does not feel much like a remake, even if that blurb would fit the TV guide.
I would say it has as much in common with the original as the Dawn of the Dead remake does with the original. You know, it's very different in style and tone, you know, but the premise is the same. And to the point where if this was called something other than Suspiria, Witchy Dance School, I don't know, people would have heard the description. So, and they would have said, well, so it's like just like Suspiria, right? You know, they're just like if you'd said people trapped in a mall.
I can't join this conversation because Eric, I've never seen the original, but I'd like to move on.
Eric, I would too. Eric, you saw the movie Masks. Remember that German film?
Nope.
From a couple of years ago.
I remember that. Oh. I don't remember the movie.
That was technically more of a remake than this film, in my opinion, and that didn't have the name Suspiria. But either way, we'll move on. So the film came out. Limited release last year in theaters for 1 week in November or October, one of those 2 months, and then was gone after the 1 week. It's a Lionsgate film, so that's probably why they were able to get it in theaters, but oddly it didn't stay long, or they decided that it wasn't mainstream enough to put it wide, even though it starred some important people, including Dakota Johnson. But either way, I got nothing else to say about it. I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. Let's start with you, Eric.
Well, I probably first heard about this when it was announced, and the horror crowd, as they usually do, go bananas anytime a remake is announced. I have never seen the original, so I really didn't care either way. I would not have watched this unless we had done an episode on it, which we're doing. So I watched it. Didn't enjoy it. There are people out there that like this movie a lot. That's fine for them. I'm not going to say there was nothing good in the movie, because there were some good things in the movie. I thought the acting was fine. I thought some of the dancing was really interesting. I find the concepts of using dance to cast spells kind of intriguing. That's pretty cool. But overall, I would say there was about 30 minutes of entertaining material in this movie, and unfortunately it's 2.5 hours long. So it was a bit of a slog. I also personally found that the movie was too dark, and I don't mean thematically. I mean like they didn't use enough light. I was having trouble seeing a lot of what was going on. And it was also so slowly paced that I actually fell asleep a couple times while trying to get through it. So not a big fan. Everybody in the movie is fine. Tilda Swinton is always awesome. The other girls were fine. This isn't a travesty. I just did not enjoy it personally.
All right, very good. For me, I heard about it the same way Eric did, through the uproar in the horror community. I have to admit that I was part of the group that was somewhat disappointed to hear it, because I was like, I know Mike will probably say this when it's his turn, that it was kind of hard to think that this could be remade. Because the film is more of a visual style film than a straight plot. So it's like, how can you remake a film like that? But then I started hearing good things about it through the festival circuit. And then I heard who the director was. And then I became very excited about it. And then one of our co-podcasters named Jason Lloyd of Horror Failure and Bloody Bits podcast gets to go to all the Austin festivals, movie festivals, and he was able to see it, and he said it was fantastic, phenomenal. So I was very, very excited to see this film. I almost did see it at the theaters, but that weekend I just couldn't get there, especially knowing that it was a 2.5 hour film, and it would have took me a half hour to get to the only theater near me that would have played it. So I unfortunately had to skip it. So I pre-ordered the disc when it came out. I received it and whatnot. Now, my opinion of the original, the first time I watched it, or I should say the first two times I watched it, I wasn't really a huge fan. I could see why people liked it, but I wasn't really a big fan. But then I bought the Synapse 4K restoration and all that, and they released that, I think, a year ago or 2 years ago. And I rewatched it, and the original is an absolute phenomenal film. Now, understanding the story, never mind seeing it in a great format, it's really one of the best horror films, really spooky and scary. So when I watched this film, I went in blind, and I was a bit surprised that there it's like Eric said, it's very dark or drab coloring, unlike the original. And the music and soundtrack, unlike the original, is much more forgettable. The acting, as Eric said, is solid. Dakota Johnson is phenomenal in her role. Tilda Swinton's phenomenal in her three or four roles. But I'm similar with Eric. I was probably more disappointed in him because I was actually excited to see the film. And I walked out, or I should say, shut off the film after watching it. Very disappointed. Again, it's not a complete travesty. Just as Eric stated, there's about a half hour of good things in it. Unfortunately, even when some of the good things were happening, they may have chose the wrong music to play, or it was dark or whatever. So certain things during the good scenes kind of hampered even the good scenes. I will state that, I was very disappointed. It wasn't scary at all. And I was hoping to have a great horror film. It was more of an art house film. And even the quote-unquote symbolism was kind of forced upon us a bit. I don't know. It was just disappointing for me. Mike?
I have to say, I am absolutely shocked by you gentlemen's reaction to this film. I thought I was dealing with two metropolitan 21st century men who... But really, you're just a couple of troglodytes who fear the earthy power of women.
Shut the fuck
and the
up.
Power of the womb and sisterhood. Hello?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, well, we're listening, Mike. We're listening.
No, Eric cut out for me. Okay, no, it's look, I wanted to see this in theaters. You absolutely nailed what I was going to say about the idea of a remake. I am very much pro pretty much anything. As a film, I'm more than willing to give almost anything a shot except The Gallows 2, because I gave The Gallows 1 a shot and now you're done. But right, this isn't like, oh, say Pet Sematary, where it's an interesting story or an interesting concept, you know, and the original isn't a true classic. Right. So you can certainly it's the you
it's
don't like you don't like the original film, Phil.
I do too. I didn't you hear what I said after rewatching it on the Synapse 4K release?
Oh, okay, no, I missed
that. Best horror films I ever saw. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, look, I love it too, but it's not held in the same esteem as, say, The Shining or Alien. Or for that matter, Suspiria. So I'm certainly willing to entertain any kind of a remake. I know that's heresy in the eyes of some horror fans, but in this case, this was purely the result of the original's a classic, not for the script, but for the director and his sense of visual style.
The dream likeness, yes.
Now that's also what I don't like about the original. Is that I don't, and I've mentioned many times on the podcast, I'm generally not a fan of the pure cinema visual sumptuous is everything, and the plot, we'll see if we can find a way to work a plot into the story later aspect of a lot of Italian horror. So it's not my thing. I saw Suspiria, and unlike some classics, where I say I just don't understand why it's a classic. I get it. The visuals are fantastic, but the story isn't enough to drag me in, and so it's just not my cup of tea. So I certainly was very open to the idea of somebody doing something different with it, even if I didn't understand why. Because, you know, a young girl basically being taken in by a coven of witches isn't such an original concept that you just can't call it, you know, young girl taken in by a coven of witches, you know, and release that as its own independent film. Nevertheless, I get it, marketing, so we remake Suspiria. All right, fine. But the original is not sacred to me. I am perfectly willing to watch it, perfectly willing to see it. Came and went way too quickly because, again, it was out in a week. It was a planned limited release. I never had a chance to see it in theaters. And as I've mentioned earlier, it has been a really, really busy time for me. I didn't realize it was a 2.5-hour movie. And as it came down to it, I knew I was going to have to watch it last night. And my wife, Pam, wanted to watch it with me. And I was afraid I was going to be falling asleep through the 2.5-hour film. Much to my surprise, I was stayed awake through it. I was engrossed through the vast majority of it. I found a lot of it kind of interesting. I didn't have any problems with the visuals, with it being too dark, personally. But then the ending came. And to me, the ending shit the bed, because I don't think they did enough. It was one of those things like, and weird shit happens.
Because
Ex Machina is a fantastic film. But yeah,
the phrase.
Now, but this is built off the mythology of the original Argento trilogy.
It's so different.
And yet, well, but it's the concept of the three mothers is there, and they do lay that out. But there's a lot of things that are unclear about it. And I thought I was confused by it, and I asked online. Somebody wasn't able to give me an answer. Tell me what it was. So I went and looked. I said, all right, somebody explain the ending to me. I was like, okay, I didn't need to have the ending explained to me. I had basically figured out the ending. But there was nothing there that made it any more sense than what I said. Well, I guess it kind of this is what happened.
Or any more compelling, maybe.
Right. But it's not like, you know, where, you know, Eric and I were big fans of Hereditary, and for me, that film puts all the pieces together at the end. And I know some people don't feel that way, but I certainly did. I never had that, moment. Now I get it, and then look back at everything else that had transpired in the film, and stuff just, you know, Sixth Sense style starts clicking into place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't there for me with this. So it's a 2.5-hour movie. It's in 6 acts. I enjoyed acts 1 through 5. I did not care for act 6. And unfortunately, act 6 is what it's all building towards. And that's what you're doing, is you're building anticipation for it. It's got good moments. You know, the dance stuff is great. It isn't scary, but I don't think horror films have to be scary. It has at least a couple of very disturbing moments, in my opinion. I had a problem with one performance that I'll get to maybe when we get into spoilers, and I can't recommend it. If somebody loves it, great, you know, as long as you're not enjoying the gallows, I don't care what you enjoy, you know. It's
what did Pam think?
She didn't care for it. We didn't have a chance to talk very much about it. Her main takeaway was like, so Christy didn't watch this, huh? I bet there's a whole bunch of symbolism in there.
Yeah, we could have used her on this one.
And I'm sure I know there's symbolism in there, and there's some of it's very blatantly obvious, you know, with the Berlin Wall and whatnot. But I'm sorry. For me, it's a miss. It's a near miss. It almost made it and then didn't stick the landing. And unfortunately, if you've seen, you know, gymnastics in the Olympics, you kind of have to stick the landing. And especially for a story like this, that's kind of building all towards something.
Which is interesting, because Mike seems to dislike it for different reasons than myself and Eric. Because you said you kind of liked the first 5 acts, and me or Eric are like, no. So
it's a slow burn.
So
I'll grant that.
I didn't see any burning. I just saw slowness.
Yeah.
We'll get to spoilers, yeah.
Yeah, but before we get into spoilers, so I posted on a Facebook group this morning about some comments that Argento said that he felt it didn't fit with the feeling of the original, and that's what I was trying to get at too, Mike, which is, like you said, it still has the Mother Suspiria and all that other stuff, and yet the character is completely different in this one than the original.
Well, the story is told in a completely different style.
Right. So, and I think that may be Argento's reasoning. But either way, people started debating about remakes. And the point was, I was trying to make had nothing to do with whether or not a film should be remade or not, because as all of us agree, who cares if people remake a film, because remakes can be good and it doesn't tarnish the original. So I had to write this blurb up about why the original is awesome and this one isn't. And it's very short, so let me just read it. And this is what I wrote on Facebook. I love remakes and am glad they make them. Why not? Some great ones are The Thing, The Crazies, It, Dawn of the Dead, among others. And doing them doesn't tarnish the original if the new one blows. However, today's discussion isn't whether or not remakes should be made, or are they any good. Today's discussion is whether the remake of Suspiria is great, or sucks, or is somewhere in the middle. Unfortunately, being a remake, it will always be compared to the original. That's just how it works. But for me, my opinion, I can see if one sees the remake without ever seeing the original, they would think it is a fine film. I would say it is nothing great, probably forgotten soon enough, but nothing horrendous. Yet knowing of and having seen the original, the new Suspiria, as a horror film, does not compare at all. It isn't scary. One of the villains isn't threatening. If anything, the villain is intentionally shaded as good, or misunderstood, if you prefer, by the end of the film. And Mother Suspiria isn't the existential threat that she is in the original. The original is a true horror film through and through. Mother Suspiria's goal is all power and to begin in an apocalypse that would make Night on Bald Mountain look like a costume party. Death, destruction, corruption, and hell on earth, with its dreamlike colors and its splendid music, leave the viewer uncomfortable and creeped out. We know all the dance instructors and ownership are somewhat eccentric and maybe a bit off. Seeing the supernatural murders in such gruesome and stylized ways of some of the dancers who want out, we know there is some nefarious underbelly behind the dance school itself. The movie is Argento's Night on Bald Mountain. It's a Hieronymus Bosch painting. The horror is seen in Dante's Divine Comedy, specifically Inferno, or the suffering the Cenobites refer to in Hellraiser. That is only some of the reasons why Suspiria 1977 is a great film and a great horror film, and why Suspiria 2018 doesn't compare. It has nothing to do with being a remake, as some folks are trying to confer here.
Well, so, I'll argue that, because your whole argument is that it's not the original.
I'm trying to say, as a horror film, it's not a great horror film.
But you didn't credit. But your almost every criticism you made is how it isn't as good as the original,
and
or
yet,
how it's different than the original, and which yet, is criticizing it for being a remake.
No, I said because it is a remake, it will always be compared with the original.
It will always be, but you didn't have to do that.
Well, when you're expecting the remake to be a scary horror film that would take one of the great villains in horror history and then convert that great horror villain into what we have in this film, it's a huge disappointment. It's like taking Frankenstein and making him a joke.
Right, but they've done that. That was Young Frankenstein. You know,
right,
they've,
but
they've,
that was
they've
intentional,
done,
and we knew that from the beginning.
They've done things like where they turn Dracula into an action hero. You're not taking the film for what it is. You're taking it for what it isn't.
Well, that's fair, Mike. I'm not going to debate your points.
I'm not saying. Listen, that's the trap to being a remake, you know, and I don't disagree with that. But it is entirely, if this was a completely original film and it did not have the name Suspiria on it, I don't know how many of those complaints you would still be able to muster up, right? Because it's a different thing. I didn't enjoy it. It had nothing to do with the
fact. They would have to change the three mothers scenario too, because those are great villains that in this movie are turned into something different.
Well, you don't even get the three mothers. You get a mother.
Well, so as well as in Suspiria, you only get that one mother too.
Right.
The first one, which is...
But, you know, you could... I mean, look, you basically, that's what Rob Zombie was ripping off with Lords of Salem, right? So... You know, if he could do that and basically tell his version of Suspiria with Lords of Salem, you know, and you just change who the figure is, the satanic figure or the cult figure, you know, there's no reason he couldn't have done that here. Right, you know, Eric certainly didn't like it, and he has never seen the original. And I didn't like this for reasons that are different from the reasons I didn't like it.
Right. Well, and I guess I dislike it for another reason, too, which is they take a great villain and turn her into something of an odd sympathetic figure, which was kind of bizarre.
So we have the holy trinity of dislikes. We all dislike it for completely different reasons.
Yes.
That's one talented movie maker.
Yeah, look, it depends on what you're looking at, and I think the performances are competent. You know, the performances are good. I don't care that the villain I'm guessing you're talking about is Blanc.
There's two villains I was talking about. One is they turn it isn't scary. One villain isn't threatening. If anything, the villain is intentionally shaded as good, at least by the end of the film. And the other villain, which is Mother Suspiria, isn't an existential threat that she is in the original.
Well,
when Blank should not be considered a good person because she's a murdering bastard, and they try to make her sound feel like a good person because she becomes a motherly figure to someone that is going to be basically turned
sacrificed
into a witch, sacrificed. And yet, the person that Mother Suspiria is someone that cleans house when, in fact, and becomes, quote-unquote, somewhat of a good character as well. And so it's like, this just doesn't make sense. It's, I don't know.
Well, and that's... I'm not going to say this is the case for everyone. For some of the reviews I read, they liked the fact that it was all about the good witchy power, you know, you know, that this is very much about, in many ways, abusive power. You know, you have Nazi Germany as a obvious backdrop to this.
And Eastern Bloc nations as well.
Eastern Bloc nations, because the school is facing the Berlin Wall.
Yep, the con.
You know, have the Lufthansa airliner hijacking going on.
Yep, the RAF, which is the Red Army faction.
Right.
Yep.
So this is very much about people with power or
oh, that makes so much more sense.
What?
I thought the RAF was the Royal Air Force.
Oh, that's good.
No, yeah. Seriously.
All right. That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, if you don't know, I mean, it was in the 70s, so
yeah.
If you didn't follow German history, I could see not knowing or understanding it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't know exactly what I was referring to, and I was too tired to look it up. That was my first thought, and I immediately dismissed it and said, "Okay, it can't possibly be, because it's all in conjunction." Because I know the Brits didn't hijack Lufthansa. You know, I don't know.
Right, that's why I'm so confused. I'm like, Royal Air Force. What the fuck?
Right. And you're not going to have a PLO. PLO terrorists asking for the freedom of RAF British soldiers.
too funny.
But so just hold on now, Eric. Does this change your opinion of the film?
Not really.
Okay. I just want to make sure you were not like some Anglophile.
My opinion of myself. I'm an idiot, but it doesn't change my opinion of the movie.
Okay. So yeah, it's yeah, can we get into spoiler warnings? Because we're kind of yeah.
We have a wiki that we need to do first.
Wiki. Oh, by the way, somebody. Oh God, who was it? It wasn't one of the usuals. On our Facebook group, posted an awesome meme of a witch with two turntables that had pentagrams on it. And said Wicca. That was awesome.
Oh yeah, I saw that too. I forget who it was. That was awesome.
All right. So the IMDb wiki. I don't like this, but here it goes. A darkness swirls at the center of a world-renowned dance company, one that will engulf the artistic director, an ambitious young dancer, and a grieving psychotherapist. Some will succumb to the nightmare. Others will finally wake up.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much my reaction. That's not the movie I watched, but okay.
I do have one of our listeners and contributors on our Facebook group who actually liked the movie a lot, and she wrote to us and gave her top 10 horror films of 2018 for our recap episode. Her name is Amy Schuffs-Rain, and I'm hoping I pronounced that right. And she had Suspiria as her favorite film of last year, and she wrote this little blurb, and I read it before. I think she didn't like A Quiet Place, though. That was kind of surprising. But she wrote, I understand that a lot of people didn't give this movie the scrutiny they did Hereditary, and that is too bad. It takes the theme of witchcraft as a form of female power acting within history, but outside of the familiar socio-political constructs of Western Judeo-Christian ideals that have already been ruptured by the Nazis' attempted resetting the world into a neo-pagan cult of personality, and the witch goddess attempt to reset its own system of worship and reality construction as it brings forth a new power in the form of Susie, the Dakota Johnson character. It is breathtaking how it shows how the heart of the magic she wields is not the modern spoken spells of magic, but that of dance and movement, which Eric, you mentioned, as well as color, which goes back to the ancient forms of communicative power. It shows how feminine power is much more to do with physical reality, which is evoked by its use of body horror, and constructs a vision of witchcraft that holds its power and terror in a world before words. The psychologist can only witness but never truly understand, as he and we must live in a world of language and logic, which are easily twisted into lies and careless promises. Its gentle nods to Argento's giallo palette and score are the work of a truly skilled director. I can only hope he is able to make the movies of Argento's other films, the other mother films, and Tilda Swinton in that red dress is enough to make this movie legendary. Okay. So that was her opinion.
Yeah, I didn't find it a lot of color. It was drab film, and yeah, I don't mind that necessarily. I thought there was a lot of interesting visual stuff in it. It's just not as flashy and in your face as Argento was, which was very much typical of the Italian films of the time.
Right. Well, and also Argento was specifically trying to make a living nightmare, while this was trying to be more in the real world.
Right, and this goes backwards, right? In a way, this is art where with the original you don't know what's going on until the end,
right?
You don't know that there's witches, you don't know what they're doing, and Susie is very much a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Here Susie is a willing participant all along. You know from the beginning that it's a coven of witches. You know from the beginning that the witches are planning on sacrificing Susie. And at the end, that's when you don't know what's going on.
And also, the original takes place, I believe, in the Saar Valley or Alsace-Lorraine or something like that. So it's not even, it has nothing to do with the Berlin Wall or
well, that's
East-West communism and all that other stuff.
Yeah, but that's a minor thing. That's just adding extra layering onto the messaging, whether you think it was effective or hand-handed, is, you know, again, it's your mileage varies. I've seen both people make that argument. People make both those arguments. I'm kind of meh, whatever. I don't even know how much I can get into the women power thing because, you know, there's a lot of physicality in male power too. You know, it's yeah, and you also look at this.
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, well, you know, they didn't talk the Jews into the oven. I'm just saying, in Nazi Germany. It's it's also, you know, the one of the, which I thought was one of the more sympathetic figures, as problematic as I found it, was the professor, not the professor, the psychologist. You know, you can't draw. I'm not saying it doesn't speak to female empowerment or female power, but it certainly doesn't. It's not a strictly, you know, girl power thing, right? It's not, because you obviously have the women are the worst villains in this film, outside the Nazis who are referenced. You know, the Nazis themselves are not in this film. The women are just as cruel in their own way as any man would be. So it is speaking to women power, but not necessarily women power as an inherently good thing, right? Or better or superior thing, if that makes sense.
I would agree, especially when quote unquote justice is done at the end, bystanders or people who voted a certain way were as guilty as those who actually participated in, I guess, the evil. Set were also executed at the end as well by the mass bloodbath. So and again, that's fine if you want to talk about those who empower the evil people, they are guilty too. But you could argue that the other side, the blank side, which is because there's two groups, the Marcos and the blank side. The blank side were as evil, if not more so, throughout the movie than the Marcos side, because the blank side were the ones that were killing all the dancers that were finding out things. So
I don't think that was a part of the divide in the film. I think they were all in agreement on that.
Well, okay, pause. Pause. Yes. Spoiler flag off. At this point, all bets are off. Spoilers. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the film that doesn't start out, but not long after you enter into, the film starts with Chloe Moretz Grace as playing Patricia escaping, going to the psychologist, and basically spills out the whole storyline to the psychologist. So you're with what's going on page one, right?
Right.
Pretty much from the get-go in the film. So not long after we get into the school, we see the witches sort of take a vote as to who is going to be the head bitch in charge, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a choice between Blanc and Marcos. And Marcos. All right. Marcos with a K, not Imelda. And Marcos wins by 3 votes out of however many it is. So there is a divide, but it's the idea that they all support Marcos and they will continue to, and there will be no, what is it, no bad blood for people's decisions to vote the other way.
Right.
These were women, you know, the women that they torture in this film, Patricia, Olga, you know, or ones that were going, that were leaving them and threatening.
Oh, and Carolyn, I think it was the other one, yeah.
It was Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah, okay. No, well, yeah, you're right, okay.
Who may have been perceived as a potential threat, you know, that would reveal their secrets.
Yep.
And so they were taking to silence them. I don't see it, because Marcos is hiding in the basement, as a good troglodyte troll would do, you know, good boogie woman. And she's hiding down in the basement. So Blanc is the front woman, right? She's the Darth Vader to Blanc's emperor, right?
Right.
So I'm not
sure. Marcus's emperor.
Right. So to Marcus's emperor. Right. So to me, I don't see her actions against those three girls as inherently, you know, rebellious. We know that there's tension between them, but we never see a lot made of that. And I think maybe that's part, to me, that's a little bit of the problem. Everyone seems to be on board with what they do. I personally would say, and for listeners who missed our year in review episode, we are counting this as a 2019 film because it was only out. I guess I would, you know, would have one of those end of the year categories being the best non-kill, because it's a non-kill is what they do to Olga in this film.
That was pretty awesome.
You know, and they never, and it was, for me, very brutal to watch.
Never mind the hooks.
Oh, and then right, and that all the whole thing, right, from the moment it starts to her being dragged into the basement and then finding out she's still alive and twisted into a pretzel, you know, days or weeks later.
When that scene happened, I was like, oh, okay, here we go.
Right.
It's like, finally, something interesting happened. But then it was another hour before anything else interesting happened.
Indeed.
Yeah, I don't know. For whatever reason, it felt like it flew by for me. And that's so I didn't really have that kind of a problem.
Mike, if I could add to what you're saying. So it felt odd that at the end, because we're not going to talk, you know, scene by scene. We'll just go wherever that Marcos's people were considered the bad. Well, you made an excellent point, which is all the Blanco people, even though they didn't vote for Marcos, all the people who voted for Blank were willing participants and agreed, you know, and so why they were speared while Marcos wasn't.
Well,
it was another thing that made me go, oh my gosh.
Well, they make a mention earlier in the film. Well, this is part of the problem, and a lot of stuff that's dropped once in ways that are not very artful, but they make a mention that Marcos claims to be Mother Suspiria.
Okay, right.
And,
oh, I missed that.
Yeah,
yeah, I missed that too. Yeah.
And Blanc doubts that that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I wonder. I don't know, but I wonder if this is a punishment for her transgression, for her.
Right.
You know, but again, it's because they go through, and I didn't. That's one of the things, the visuals I did not care for, was at the end where she's blowing up all the women who voted, and they have them saying her vote.
Right.
I voted for, you know, for Marcos. Boom. Mm-hmm. I voted for Marcos.
And
boom.
That
felt
music
really
too.
Heavy-handed.
And the music too. It's like,
and the music is very minimalist, I think.
Not at that moment, because it was like,
well,
a
maybe
pop
not
song.
That moment, but
yeah,
through a lot
like
of the
film.
Yeah. So. The fundamental thing is at the end, it just turns out that Susan is Mother Superior, and I'm like, what? Are there not summoning? Wait, but then I didn't get so. She's Mother Superior, and she summons death. And if I knew the original three films better, it would have made more sense to me. But you have to stand on your own. You can't assume that the people watching this have seen the original three, and they don't really explain that.
Well, but it shouldn't even matter, because this Mother Suspiria isn't let's bring hell on earth that the one in the original in trilogy
well,
were.
Then,
so
but, well,
it's like
no,
it doesn't even matter to have seen the originals, because the originals. They're pure evil, and here it's more of a gray character, which is bizarre.
Right. Well, they bring the death thing up the stairs, which is what confused me. You know,
I thought it was cool. I didn't quite understand what was going on, but I thought it was certainly cool looking.
I'm not saying it wasn't cool. I'm just saying I was confused. And they didn't. To me, they did not do a good and effective job of laying out the mythology. They did not do
I
a
agree.
Good job
yeah.
of laying out. Character motivations.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh,
the secondary dancers weren't built up enough to that we cared about them. Like, at least
right.
in the original, we knew at least three or four of the dancers
pretty
well.
Right, for obvious reasons, I have comparisons to Black Swan, right, in that story, and I just find it hard to believe. I don't give a shit what you say about girl power and women being united. No way in hell do you have a bunch of girls who are trying to be professional dancers living in a school just not think twice about the new girl in the school taking over the lead part voluntarily.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with gender. It has to do with
human nature.
It's like, who's this new person that gets all the goodies, and we've been working our ass off for the past 6 months, no matter what gender you are.
And now you can make the argument, well, that's not what the movie's about, and it is not what the movie's about. That's true. But it would have added a little more color to the film. It would have added a little bit more
realism
to the film.
Realism.
A little more realism. I don't know how necessary realism is in this. and maybe in other sources of tension. I think they did a poor job because large portions of Susan's backstory is revealed through these dream flashes.
And I know how you like those, Mike.
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of those, but they also happen so quickly. Some of it's trying to process, who did it happen to? Where did it happen? What images am I seeing are coming from Blanc? Which images I'm seeing are coming from
Suzanne,
you know, why was it necessary of Suzanne? You know, even the mythology of, you know, so Mother Superior is reborn as a person. I guess I missed somewhere along the line, as opposed to was she Susan all along? Did she inhabit Susan?
Right.
Did Susan become her?
It's debatable. Susan,
right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you don't know. Yeah, and all of that, and it's not. And I really didn't like the movie. In the end, the movie kind of turned me off enough that I didn't feel like going back and watching again to see what breadcrumbs they left. Because, again, unlike Hereditary or, you know, other four, Sixth Sense or something where...
Those are scary. Hereditary is a scary film. This
was a scary film, but I can also go back and think it through and look at the events. Oh, I see that. Oh, now that makes sense. Oh, now that... And I can get a chain reaction of how things make sense. And I'm sure there's stuff I missed, and it'll make more sense when I rewatch it, but... Here, I was like, and nothing really much made sense to me in hindsight, and that doesn't give me an interest in rewatching the film. It really just doesn't. You know, the whole thing with having the psychiatrist having to watch. We need a watcher. Let's get the guy who sent the cops to us in the first place.
You know what this movie made me feel like? It was similar to another Mia Goth film, which we discussed, which was A Cure for Wellness, which is, it's trying to be this important art house weird drama film. And
I
then
A Cure for Wellness was a better movie.
Well, that's true, too. And then the last 30 minutes of that film, Cure for Wellness, as well as this film, is B-movie madness. And so, you know, it had two different feelings of the film, and like Eric said, the Cure for Wellness was more entertaining for sure.
Well, in Suspiria, there were three scenes that I honestly enjoyed. One of them, Mike just mentioned, was when they attack Olga, or when she attacks Olga. That was a fascinating scene because it was the introduction of dancing as spell casting, plus the injuries were pretty brutal. So that was a good scene. Then when they actually did the performance of Volk, I thought that was interesting. Yeah. I liked the performance. And then the chaos scene at the end was cool too, even though I didn't really fully understand it. I can appreciate some good gore when it's there. And that was some good gore. But the rest of it, I'm just like, meh.
Yes, yeah, good gore, I don't mind. It's the here's the revelation. I'm like, it's not a revelation. Right. That's a
well. I'm with Eric. I enjoyed the Olga scene because it was creepy and it was interesting. The Volk scene was good because it was well choreographed and it was interesting. And one of the few times the lighting I actually enjoyed, and the end scene. I mean, it had the gore and the nudity that you would see in midnight movies and stuff, but the music of that pop song when all the people's heads are blowing up just kind of ruined it for me.
I don't even remember the music.
Yeah, well, and then also Mike's point, too, which is when I'm watching it and it's like, oh, this is cool. And then I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're making Mother Suspiria clean house rather than being the villain in the original that wants to bring hell on Earth. And caused the apocalypse, and it's like,
and
this
see,
sucks.
Counter to your theory that you just posed in that thing that you wrote, you're holding it up against the original.
I understand, but I mean, when I see Universal's Dracula, and then I see the horror Dracula by a Hammer, it's the same villain. But then
I know, but what I'm gonna have to side with Mike on this one. What you're saying here is that this is not good because it's not the original.
Well, I'm saying it's not good because a great horror villain, iconic villain, at least in my opinion, if not as big as Frankenstein and Dracula, at least in my opinion, it's as important. That villain is not the type of villain you would expect in a horror film in this remake. And that kind of upset me.
I haven't seen the original, so I'm just telling you, for somebody who didn't have that to compare it to, that made just as much sense as anything else in the movie.
And I can tell you that every Halloween I see kids who are dressed up as Dracula and Frankenstein who've never seen those movies. And I've never seen somebody come to my door dressed as Suspiria.
Yeah, and you're probably right. But you know, if you have a top 10 horror list and it has these horror villains, I mean, such as a Mother Superior.
It's a different take on the character. It's a different take on the mythology and the story. It's not. It's clearly not trying to be the same thing.
Right.
And just cleaning house in its of itself isn't necessarily that she's good. It's more the thing that really betrays her as being sympathetic. Because I want to point out, she doesn't exactly put Blanc's head back on her shoulders. Is the whole scene at the end with the psychiatrist?
And that makes no sense at all. And I'll tell you why, Mike. Because.
Yeah.
She says all this stuff to the psychiatrist and then makes him forget everything.
Well, she's...
It's like, what? There was no reason to tell him anything.
Yeah, well, whatever. I don't... That's probably for the audience to try to explain her motivation, but even that doesn't really make a lot of sense because she's going to reward him by making him forget not just the pain and tragedy, the pain and humiliation he suffered at the hands of the witches, but the wife he loved and lost.
Yeah,
which is a horrible thing, and they do it as an act of mercy, and that to me is.
And that's the thing, Mother Suspiria. Again, I'm comparing it to the original, Eric, is not a person that gives mercy. And so that
in this
kind
movie.
Of it, she yeah. does, yeah, and that kind of upset me.
Yeah, but I don't see it. To me, this is sort of like, if I can go to the remake of Battlestar Galactica. The original Battlestar Galactica, the main villain was Baltar, played by John Colicos, who was your classic mustache twirling, sneering at the screen, scenery chewing villain.
Yep.
And they replaced him with, in the updated version, a guy who was like a patsy and whiny and nerdy. And
who is that? The guy that was banging the hot blonde?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
And that was for me jarring, and I didn't really like it. And his role in the mythology of the new series was completely different, you know. But over time, it grew on me, and I accepted that version of Baltar is very different from the original.
Well, let me make another analogy.
It was just a completely different take on the character that just happened to share the same name.
Let me do another analogy then. It would be like remaking Hellraiser, and Pinhead is a sympathetic character and spares his people.
He's a sympathetic character in the original.
Yeah, somewhat. In the sequel, anyway.
Well, I'm talking about the original. The original, he was a demon, and he liked killing people. And if they turned him into a guy,
you make it sound like killing people automatically makes you a bad person.
Well, yeah.
In which case I should point out, she killed a lot of people in this movie.
Yeah, but she wouldn't be Pinhead would kill everybody. This woman is like,
torture them. He wouldn't necessarily kill them.
I was gonna say Pinhead's not interested in killing. He's interested in pain. Suffering will be legendary.
I'm just saying,
it's like the aliens.
I'm just saying, you're still holding it to, you know, this is what it is, and it's that, and it's not. And I'm just saying, it's not. That's not something that's going to bother me about it or Eric about it. It bothers you, that's fine, but that's blaming the movie for not being what something else is.
Right.
And it's not it's not Frankenstein, it's not, it isn't scary. Well, except it has its moments that are there, but you know, there's the scene in the catacombs or whatever in the basement, you know, where there's the woman with the no hands and feet. I thought that was kind of a creepy
thing.
That was
interesting. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it has a moment here, but you're right, there is no sense of dread because you're in on the plan the entire time. Right? I mean, you don't know the details of the plan, but you're in on it, and there's no way that you don't really get much suspense or dread built
And Susan was more of a cipher rather than a character that we related to.
Right. So, I wish they had done more, and I was waiting for the. Like I said, it had me for the first, for really like 80-90% of the film. I was waiting, but it was all that was anticipating where it was going and what they were going to do to her in the end. And then they gave a twist that I never felt was earned or justified in any way. And to me, that whole film is built on that twist.
You know how much I tortured myself, Eric? I watched the entire credits, and at the end there was a 10 second.
I saw that.
Oh, you did too. So you supported yourself too.
Because I'm not the only one. I checked out and was on my iPad.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah,
that's the only reason. You're right. Yeah,
so it's a fun thing. I just muted it, and Pam was, you know, I was staying downstairs to do some stuff, and you know, I didn't want to go turn the TV back to TV before Pam went up to bed. And Pam was like dawdling, going to the bathroom or doing whatever she was doing, and as she's about to go up the stairs, you know, I saw the image pop up because the credits were just about to expire. I was like, whoops, hold on. And we went back and we watched it. So, ooh, there's something else. Maybe this will explain it. Nope, it's just a stupid-ass scene of her going to the
wall or something, touching something.
Years later. And I got to say, something else that annoyed, even though he's, for me, the most sympathetic character in the film. Yes, I know I'm a man who found the man the most sympathetic character in the film. I was it bothered me watching the film throughout because I was thinking, and I wasn't that far off, as I was watching the psychiatrist, I'm like, is this a young man they put in old man makeup? Sort of like Guy Pearce in Prometheus. And other than Max von Sydow in The Exorcist, I can usually tell that. It usually stands out like a sore thumb to me. And so I had this uncanny valley kind of thing going on throughout the entire film with this character. And I just couldn't stop staring at it, trying to figure out what is off about it. And sometimes that works, and that's a good thing, but it didn't work in a way that was productive for me. And then it turns out that it's actually Tilda Swinton dressed up as a man.
Right.
Yeah, a couple of things about that character. I read some criticism, meaning not bad. I mean, criticism as in, you know, movie.
Critical thought.
Yes. That was talking about how the psychiatrist, some people said, was actually bad because they're supposed to be the people who just watch things happen and don't try to stop things. And that, I thought that was odd. But second,
he was stupid because he was trying to find out what was going on. Right. He's the one that sicked the police on them.
Right, exactly. But the other thing, too, about that is I know this director is good buddies with Tilda Swinton, used her in many other films and whatnot, but I don't understand why they just didn't hire, Christopher Plummer or someone like that to play the old man, because it was bizarre that they would, whether it was a young man that was in makeup or Tilda Swinton that was in makeup, it just didn't make sense,
I could think of two reasons.
Okay.
Neither of which I find very compelling. And I think it's fair to say we've been very pro Tilda Swinton on this podcast in the past.
Oh, I love Tilda Swinton.
Oh, she's awesome.
Okay. So this is really not a criticism specifically aimed at her necessarily, but possibility one is that this was a way to entice her into doing the film. You know, is that she got to do like her Peter Sellers bit, where Peter Sellers would often play
like
several characters.
Yeah.
Multiple characters. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Or the other thing is that they were trying to make some sort of statement about, I don't know, male-female duality, or they were making a statement about how really both have Bonk and Marcos were really the same underneath the same skin or whatever. There was some statement they were trying to make. I suspect it was more the former than the latter.
Well, I don't even know if that's true, because again, he's it based off of his casting of her in other films, I'm thinking they're kind of buddies anyway. So right. Even well, that is hard to believe.
So I think it was just, or I guess it would tie, it was just giving her something fun to do. Right. Because really her playing Mother Marcus, you could have put Eric Webster under there and nobody would have noticed. Right.
Right.
Because there was so much makeup.
Right.
Right. It was a bodysuit.
Right.
It could have been Ted Raimi in there. You know, it doesn't matter.
Right, right. Yeah, it was like Ted Raimi from Evil Dead 2. Right.
Right. And right. It's more because I found it distracting to the whole time. It was bothering the fuck out of me the entire time.
Yep, same here.
Right. Why couldn't they have cast Christopher Plummer? God knows McDowell will do anything for a sandwich nowadays.
Yeah. Robert De Niro's an old timer now. I mean, anybody you could have got.
You could have cast anybody or an old German actor. That's fine. There's probably lots of those. The Dow
Max von Sydow would have done it as a Swede. Yeah. He
all sorts, in. All sorts of people you could have got for that. I don't know why they did it. And this, and again, I'm not saying as a criticism of the film necessarily. I'm saying that is a very me thing because that annoys me whenever people do it.
Yeah.
With the exception of Max von Sydow in The Exorcist, because that's one of the best makeup jobs I've ever seen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and I thought it was bizarre. I'm not quite sure why they did it. Now why that other character she played, the one that where she stabs herself in the neck? I don't even understand that character. Why she was in it?
Oh yeah, that was another one. I didn't get that at all. It made no sense.
That was weird.
It
didn't explain it. Did she vote for Marcos? Did she vote for Blank? Is she upset that Marcos won?
I don't know. I don't have any idea who she was, what she was, why she did it that way.
Right.
We've talked about this in the past. Some films are just too inscrutable for their own good. My opinion, this is one of them. And I don't hate the movie. I don't fault anybody for liking the movie. This is not a movie where they're unlike some films where I think it's just a film that is complete bullshit. And so,
it's not horrendous by any means. It's not a horrendous film. It's just,
I think they were trying to do something.
They were
a little too clever. They were a little too clever by half and they overcomplicated it. You know, they took what could have been a good song and they added an extra drum machine to it, and now they ruined it.
Well, and even what they're trying to say, it's like I was reading critics, reviews in the film, and some people were saying, are they trying to say that woman in power is bad, or are they trying to say woman in power is liberating, or it doesn't matter because as people, these people are bad. So it doesn't matter if they're trying to say, what is this trying to say about women? Because it's just bad people. And it was like, what? Yeah. And,
right.
And so the
exactly.
Critics are right.
Because they're juxtaposing the witches with Nazi Germany and Soviet Union.
Right.
You know, or the Eastern Bloc nations. So, and
right. Communism.
And terrorism. And, you know, there's all sorts
of terrorism too. You got it. Yeah.
So I think certainly aspects of female empowerment in that way of women using their bodies or what have you is there. But it's not a simple woman power, good man power, bad.
Right.
It was woman power good, woman power bad.
Yeah.
Well, it's about use of power, right? But even something like the Volk, right? Volk is German for folk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we're people.
For the
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
So here she's written this musical Volk in 1944 in Germany.
Yep.
Now,
that's a good point. Yeah.
That is, and let's remember, where the average American knows the term Volk from.
Volkswagen.
It's Volkswagen, which is the Hitler mobile, right? I mean, that's the Hitler mobile. Nobody wants to say that.
Right. Well, they all were. I mean, Mercedes Benz was you know,
right.
a profit.
BMW started making engines for airplanes during the war.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they were all doing it. Yeah.
Right. So what were they trying to say with her in Nazi Germany writing a popular performance piece about the people?
Right.
Were they trying to show her complicit in the Nazis? Were they trying to say? Am I overthinking this? Because
that was unclear to me too, Mike. I don't understand the significance of the setting, other than it was taken from the original. Yeah, I don't know if they're trying to make any points there.
Yet the original had nothing to do with symbolism with Nazis either. So that's so it's completely different, even if it is in the country of Germany,
Have Volk be written in 1946.
Right. Or they could have just done Black Swan. They didn't even need to do Volk unless they were trying to make a point about, like you said, Mike, Nazi Germany. Why make a fake dance for a movie?
I believe, and tell me if I'm pulling this out of my ass here, but I believe that was supposed to be a magical performance. They were casting a spell with that performance.
Oh, I agree.
That's why they were doing that rather than Black Swan.
But okay. All right. So that's a fair point. But obviously they named it Volk for a reason, and it was 1944 for a reason.
Right, I get that. Mike has a good point there.
But was this dance supposed to be the thing that brought Hitler down? Because it wasn't. But
but Eric's point's good too, which is it had to be a fake dance because it has to be. It had to be an invented dance because it had to be used to cast spells. But it didn't have to be called Volk, and it didn't have to be from 1944. That was obviously intentional, related to the war period.
Yep. Right, and I don't know that there's enough text there to support a definitive answer one way or another. And sometimes that's clever, and sometimes that's annoying. And here it's the annoying side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, 1944 was D-Day. That was the big thing that happened in Europe in 1944.
Well, because they all were rushing to get tickets to see the performance?
No, I'm just saying I'm just trying to think of why 1944 was an important year, besides it being part of the year that Nazi Germany owned Germany, or ruled Germany. But they could have chose 1938, they could have chose 1941, right? But they chose 1944 for a reason. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe it was related to D-Day, and that's when the Allies came in and cleaned house. And then the Soviets came running across Europe, too. So I don't know.
We're back in World War II.
Well, that's unfortunately the backdrop of this film, right? I mean, from World War II all the way to the RAF and the PLO,
Royal Air Force.
I was just waiting for
I'm such an idiot.
I'm just waiting for Johnny Rodden to start singing, the PLO, the RAF, the IRA, whatever. But I don't know. I don't know.
I'm ready for this to be over.
Yeah, look, I'm just like, if you love this film, more power to you. I didn't like the original. I didn't like this for opposite reasons, sort of, or very different reasons. It didn't work for me either. Maybe this is just not a story that's ever going to click with me. I know it's frustrating when you have. I really wish we would have had Chrissy. I really wish we would have had.
We really could have used her.
Let me state a fact. Chrissy purposely bowed out because she knew she was going to hate this film. Yes. I did let her know.
You abandoned ship, and I mocked her for it.
I did let her know that everybody smoked in the film, and she was very happy to hear that.
Well, here's the thing. Because of the way the film is done, is inversed, right, and that there is no mystery, the visuals aren't in your face, I don't know that she would have hated the movie.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But Chrissy's interesting. Some art house films with symbolism she hates and some she likes. She's similar to you, Mike. So I don't know which way she would have gone.
Well, no, I like art house films with. I don't mind art house films with symbolism. I hate art house films that have nothing to it.
That's what I said.
It's not.
Art house.
It's
Mike
it's
told
not,
you he was in debate
no, no, no,
mode.
No.
I'm not implying you don't like symbolism. My point is...
Phil, you're not letting me finish. Not every film that has symbolism is an art house film is the same. You know,
that's
it's like
what
saying...
I'm talking about, Mike. You and Chris, you like some of them and you don't like some of them.
Because that's they're all... very different.
No, right, exactly. So I have no idea. That's why I said to you on Monday night, I said I'm most interested in your opinion of this film because you sometimes like art house type horror films and sometimes hate them. So I was most curious about
it. Depends on is it doing the Italian cinema thing where it's visual and no story?
Yeah, I'm agreeing.
Like Beyond the Black Rainbow. You know, or is it something that has? And the one time that jumps to mind that I enjoyed it, and I can't explain to you why, has been Lords of Salem. You know, otherwise I'm pretty consistent with it.
I guess. I mean, Hereditary, you could argue, is an art house film, and you like that. So,
but
you don't know.
It had
I don't...
a story to it, and it told the story.
Okay, I would like to stop arguing and wrap up this episode.
I think you just don't know what I'm talking about. I'm trying to
stop and wrap up.
But they're not all created equal.
Just stop and wrap up.
Right, and that's
this is no longer enjoyable.
Fair enough. Okay.
But I want to ask, do you know if Abe enjoyed the film?
I think he was lukewarm on it.
Okay. Yeah.
However, I think he liked the original because that's why he wanted to go see the remake.
All right.
Yes. But we can get his 5-minute opinion next week if he rejoins us. Let's see. Any other scenes anybody wanted to bring up? Anything?
No.
Nope.
Okay. I did get an email from Amy Schuss Rain or an instant message from, and she wrote, "If you bought the disc and are sad about it, I will buy it off you. Sorry, you may not like the film." So, there you go. All right. So what's Eric? Actually, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Ascansity Podcast. That's spelled ASKANCITY. You can find it on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, and Spotify.
And Mike, you do a blog and you do a number of other podcasts with myself and Eric.
Yeah, my blog is Unnatural Selections, www.unnaturalselections.com. Phil and I are currently engaged in doing the Searching...
Congratulations!
Yes. Searching for American Gods podcast. We will be bringing Eric into our menage a trois for the...
you know nothing, Jon Snow.
No. Podcast, which is coming back mid-April. And at some point in the far-flung future, we will be visiting Westworld in the Bullets, Brothels, and Bots podcast, all of which can be found on darkdiscussions.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play,
Spotify.
And Spotify, and wherever good podcasts can be found.
Absolutely. I haven't mentioned this for a while, but you can go to Amazon.com and you can pick up Pentagonal Sextet, which has 6 of my short stories in it. It's a book of, I think, 5 or 6 authors with each having, 6 authors with 5 stories each. So I have actually 5 stories in that that people can check out. It's a horror and genre book. I think the price is anywhere between $8 to $15, depending on what Amazon wants to price it at, depending on their sales. Please check that out if you want. I think you can get it in Kindle as well. And if you're interested, you can email me and let me know what you think. Eric, we do have a Patreon. What's that all about?
What Patreon is about supporting our online artists like us. If you would like to help us offset the cost of producing this show and help pay for server fees and new equipment and so on and so forth, you can go to the darkdiscussions.com website and follow the link on the front page, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover. We take all the submissions and draw them on a quarterly basis. For more details, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
Excellent. Very good. Very good. A couple other things. I do have a short story in a book called Invocations, which Dan Lynch wrote the foreword to that. That is a horror anthology about demon incantations and things of that nature. It's about 20 stories, has some good stuff in it, including short stories, not just by myself, but co-host Christie, a few others like Patrick Lacey, who people may know from this podcast, and so forth. It's a pretty good book, in my opinion, as well. Oh, MJ Preston, too. He has a story in it. So I guess we can give a final thought to the film. So let's start with you again, Eric.
All right. Before I do that, who did you say that message was from?
It was Amy. Amy Schuff's Rain.
Okay. I just scrolled through the Facebook page while you're doing all that, and she's also the one that posted that meme I was talking about with the wicka wicka. So thank you, Amy. You made me laugh out loud with that. So final thoughts on Suspiria. I can understand why other people might like this movie. I did not. I found it way too slow, way too long, way too dark. Like I said, I enjoyed some of the parts, but it's not a movie I'm planning on revisiting.
All right, very well, very well. For me, yeah, I mean, I probably disliked it for different reasons than Eric or Mike, because I'm obviously comparing it to a horror film that the original that I really like a lot, because that is a scary film. This film, unfortunately, didn't hold up to what I was hoping for, and some of the things, like Mike mentioned, the twist didn't work for me, and so forth. So I unfortunately can't recommend it. I did not really enjoy it, unfortunately, because I was very much anticipating liking it. So I guess if you do like it, which I know a lot of folks do, all to you, it just wasn't for me. Mike.
Yeah, I think we've said it all. I found it more compelling and more interesting to watch than the two of you did up through the very end, and then the ending made really very little sense, or there was really little justification for the way it played out and paid off. I felt cheap to me. Others, you know, your mileage will vary. Others will think it's great, and that's fine. It just didn't work for me, and since that's what the film was building towards, the whole thing ended up collapsing. So, I'm not saying don't watch it. I'd actually recommend it as something to give it at least one shot. Suspiria, to me, is not... It is a classic horror film for those who pay attention to classic horror films. It is not one of those household names, though. You know, again, you know, using my family as a reference, if I shouted Suspiria in the middle of a family gathering, no one would know what the fuck I was talking about. You know, whereas they would know, say, The Shining and Frankenstein and whatever, The Howling.
At least in North America. I mean, in Europe, Dario Argento is like a giant.
Well, that's fine, but I'm in North America.
Yep.
My family is largely in North America. Mm-hmm. So that is what that is. So I don't think this is something, but anyway, so I imagine a lot of people probably haven't seen Suspiria and won't have the baggage that people have seen the original have. And I would suggest, if that's the case, try watching it on its own. See if you like it that way. And maybe you'll like it, maybe you won't, but I think enough people have loved it that I think it's worth a shot.
Yeah, very good. I just wanted to add one last thing, which is on the Facebook page this morning, oddly, there was a disparity between folks where those who liked this film began attacking Dario Argento as a hack or a horrible person and all these other things. And I felt that was ridiculous, because whether or not you like Dario Argento's films or not, he by no means is a hack. I listed one person said that he felt only one film by Dario Argento was any good. And then I went off and named like eight films that are considered horror classics, or at least in the giallo range. Yeah, go on, Eric.
You know, people are entitled to their opinion, so if you only like that one film, that's what he liked.
Well, you're right. I just felt it was a little uncalled for people to say he sucks or he's a hack or he's an old person that's lost his mind or any of these other things. It's
so
one
you're
thing.
Entitled to your opinion, but nobody else is entitled to theirs?
No. I just felt that it would be best to say I prefer not to like – I don't like many of his films, but I understand that some are considered classics would be a more appropriate thing than saying, oh, he sucks and he's terrible. Because
yeah,
that's
but not everybody is that reserved in their communication.
Right.
Yeah, as we know, and, social media. That's for
yeah,
sure.
And you know what? If he didn't like the film, he didn't like the film. You can never trust somebody who made an original for their opinion about a remake, because if you ever notice, they all tend to not like the remakes and reboots and reimaginings or what have you, unless they're receiving a paycheck.
Right. Yeah.
Then suddenly they somehow find it in their heart to speak well of that story. But no, this is something that he lived with as in making it, you know, probably lived and breathed it for every day, for weeks, for months, if not years, and has had it as part of his canon, you know, ever since it was made and been praised for it. It's a film which is
very dear,
deep,
to him.
Personal, yeah. Ties to it. He's not going to be able to look at this objectively. You know, it's just if you said, you know what, we're going to take your mother away. Here's your new mother.
Right.
She may be Taylor Swift. She may be the most wonderful mother in the world, you know, but he's just going to say, but
right.
I like my
mother. Right. Because George Romero said the same thing about Dawn of the Dead remake and he got attacked and it's like, no. You can say his
the moral
opinion
of the story
is
the
wrong.
Internet's a horrible place.
Absolutely, and I actually said that to Facebook when they asked me for a survey a couple of days ago, randomly picked, and it says, any further things you want to say about Facebook? I go, and I wrote, social media is a cesspool of hate.
Yeah, and I'm going
truth.
To spend several
that's
hours a day on it.
I don't. I barely go on now. I go on twice a day for Facebook, and that's about it. Well, it started right before my birthday, February 23rd. Like, so the February 22nd, I just suddenly just stopped using it because work got busy, and then I just never have gone real back.
And you were like, hey, I don't miss that.
Exactly. I do not miss it that much because it is a cesspool of hate.
If a horror movie with that title has not been made, somebody needs to do it.
Absolutely.
Cesspool of hate.
Absolutely. Well,
I
actually wrote
work as a metal
a social media is a cesspool of hate was the full sentence.
Well, it all depends on what you do, right? I mean, you can go to that.
We're all guilty of it too on social
media. And for certain things,
I'm a complete angel. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, look, I finally signed up onto
Reddit. I would certainly never paste pictures of Boy George on pictures of Sons of Stark.
Why would you do that? It's the same thing.
Because it upsets Phil and that amuses me.
You can't tell the difference.
It's all in good fun. There's a difference between all in good fun and a true cesspool of hate.
Right, but you don't have to go to like 8chan, you know? It's just... You don't have to do those things. I've gone on Reddit lately, you know, looking for people talking about this film. And if I see people saying stupid shit about like Captain Marvel, you know what I do? I just scroll down the page and the posts vanish. Wow. It's amazing.
You're using the internet wrong.
Yeah, apparently.
Right. I guess I should say it just shocked me that, like, when George Romero was ripped to shreds, and now they're ripping Argento, and it's like, they're not crappy directors. You just may not like their films.
You also got to remember, Phil, that a lot of these people on Facebook just like to create conflict. It gives them some sort of kick.
Indeed.
Right, and how many times have, you know, John, you get... Have you seen someone give a quote? And speaking of Captain Marvel, that was her quote about, you know, reviewers was completely taken out of context and was done just to stir shit up. and just to make her look like someone who hates white men. You know, and it's not what she said. You know, and she wasn't even referring to the movie that they said she was referring to. You know, it was, you know, fuck you all. I don't care. Just let me enjoy my movies. Let me
and
enjoy.
And with that note, good night, folks.
There you go.
Indeed. But again, it's like you, like Eric said, like, right, we screwed up because we had to go look. We didn't have to. We could have stayed away.
Well, we don't have a choice thanks to pop-up ads and spam marketing.
Oh, it's terrible. Terrible. It's just like Michael Scott in The Office where he goes, you have to help the Nigerian prince.
That's what she said.
It's an ass. All right. So I guess we can wrap it up. So that's our final thought to the film, Suspiria 2 2018. Technically, we're going to count it as this year's, for this year, 2019's list, though I don't think it's going to make anybody's list. So I don't think we have to worry. But it is available everywhere now on VOD, Blu-ray, whatnot. It does. The Blu-ray actually has three features on it, but I did not bother watching them, and so I don't know if they're just like, you know, the 10-minute features and that's it. Unfortunately, I had no commentary or anything like that because I would have been curious to rewatch the film with a commentary.
If there had been a commentary, I probably would have purchased it because maybe that would have answered some of the questions we all have.
Right, exactly. But all in all, I can see why Dakota Johnson is an up-and-coming star because she was pretty charismatic throughout the film, and of course Tilda Swinton was phenomenal, especially in the role of, or specifically in the role of Miss Blank or Madam Blank. So I guess with all that stated, Eric,
let me leave this out. All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about this. Let me try that one again. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about the Suspiria remake. Come back next week, we'll have another topic.